This is Bootstrap Web, episode number 73. This is the podcast for you, the founder who learns by doing as you bootstrap your business online. Today, we have a very special guest, Taylor Pearson. He's coming out with a new book, The End of Jobs. I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation about the existential reality that we all deal with right now. As always, I'm Jordan.
And I'm Brian. Hey, if you host a podcast and the editing and production work is taking up all of your time and energy and you just want to focus on creating, then you've got to head over to podcastmotor.com. They're our sponsor today, and they offer complete podcast editing and production service. So here's how it works. Basically, you just hit record and record your episode, and then Podcast Motor will edit all the audio. They'll listen to your content, and so they'll edit it for all the content and take out the ums and the pauses and all that. They do complete audio engineering, get it sounding great. They write the detailed show notes. They'll actually listen and get all the links in there in your blog post. They'll create custom artwork. They'll publish the episode, they'll sync up the music, get it all sounding great and polished like a real professional podcast. We actually use Podcast Motor here on Bootstrapped Web. We highly recommend them. They've been doing a fantastic job. So if you're interested in this, head over to podcastmotor.com, tell them that Bootstrapped Web sent you there, and they'll hook you up. Definitely looking forward to this. And Taylor, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Cool. So, you know, we've heard you a couple of times on the Tropical MBA podcast, you know, working with Dan and Ian. And so, I mean, you know, let's kind of get into your backstory. Well, why don't you tell us, what are you up to today? And then we'll kind of go back and do a bit of a backstory on you.
So these days, I am a B2B e-commerce marketing consultant. That's been my main thing over the last 12 months. And then a big focus of my energy over the last 6 to 9 months has been writing this book we're talking about today. And so to rewind and talk a little bit about how I got here, I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, went to college in Birmingham, and had a study abroad experience when I was there in Argentina and was all set to be a lawyer. And came back from that experience, was like, oh my God, I do not want to be a lawyer. I do not want to spend the rest of my life living in suburban Memphis, Tennessee. And so,
you know, actually, I just have a quick question right there, yeah. You know, because we've been talking about entrepreneurship and how we became entrepreneurs. Jordan and I were actually talking about this in our mastermind group earlier today, coincidentally. Back at that time, going to law school or even before that, did you have in your mind that, you know, someday you would become an entrepreneur? Or was it like not even an option yet?
Right. Is it in the family? Is it like bound to happen or out of nowhere?
It could not have been any less probable. I didn't even know. I mean, I obviously I'd heard the word before, but my family is all in healthcare, which is the least entrepreneurial industry ever. Like it is just regulations and government. Like
giant companies. Yeah.
They're predicting now it's going to be disrupted or whatever, but for the past 50 years has been very non-entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And so it really, for me, it didn't start out as I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted more freedom. It's kind of like the short and almost cliche thing to say, but I felt, and I think a lot of people feel this, like there's a certain sense of opportunity in our generation that's not quite satisfied by what you call like traditional career scripts, whether that's like law school or medical school or an MBA. It just doesn't feel like that's the real opportunity for our generation. And I felt that for a long time, but I didn't know how to express that. Like I didn't know what that, right. What that really was.
Yeah. I can definitely relate to that myself because growing up, I never really thought like, oh, someday I'm going to start a business. I never really had that dream, even though it does kind of run in my family. Both my grandfathers were business owners and everything. But it wasn't until like you, I found that drive to get some sort of freedom or to like remove the boss basically and do my own thing. And that happened when I was working at a web agency doing web design. And then it was like, oh, I can be a freelancer at this. I didn't even know that was an option until, you know, a couple of years into it. So it's just funny how like these things just present themselves. and how it seems, or it actually is, a lot easier and more accessible today. I guess that's a lot of what you're writing about.
It is, and that was it's funny, like you talk to people and there's so many like overlapping scripts. Like the number of friends I have that worked at a web agency at one point is like, you know, it's like something like once you get the internet, you're like, oh my God, like, this changes everything.
Yeah. Like any idea, I can just make a website. You know, it's like,
yeah,
that.
It's like,
yeah. And that might be part of it. That might be part of the reason that we see so much opportunity. It, once you get into the web and start to look around, and it is just absurd the number of different things and areas and niches and business models. I mean, people make money and live their lives in an infinite number of ways, but that's not really the norm offline. So I wonder if people who are just into the internet and work in an agency, and once you get a look at that, that kind of opens up your mind to, whoa, what's possible for me? I have everyone has a place in this giant thing. It's not limited. Whereas if you don't come across that and you get into law and you get into medicine or whatever, you really don't view opportunity quite the same way as other people who are kind of drenched and soaked in the internet.
Yeah. But, you know, Taylor, so from there, like, how did you get into business and doing your own thing?
So, yeah, once I kind of crossed this line, I was like, I can't be a lawyer. I had no idea what to do. And so I decided to become an interpreter. I spoke Spanish at the time, and I thought, well, like, you know, if I speak Spanish, I can go live in some country that speaks Spanish or work as an interpreter. And so I took night classes, I got certified as an interpreter, and I was freelance interpreting. I was living in my parents' basement, like driving around to freelance interpreting gigs in Memphis, Tennessee. And I got about like 3 months into this, and I was like, this is not the answer. And ran into a guy, it was a friend of a friend from interpreting. He had an English school in Brazil. And so I hopped ship and went down and started teaching English. And while I was teaching English, I read this book called The 4-Hour Workweek, which you may have heard of. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like my aha moment, where all of a sudden I was like, wait, if I can get people to pay me money on the internet, like I can do anything. Like I can live anywhere. I can like do all, like all the freedom became very legible at that point for me.
And that's what that book really did. It gave a lot of people a glimpse into what was possible. And I think that's why it had such an effect and people still talk about it. I mean, it was 10 years later at this point, isn't it? Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think 2007 he wrote it.
Yeah, so almost a decade ago. But it was really the first time for a lot of people, even if they kind of had a sense that all this stuff was possible, they saw it on paper. And that kind of opened people's eyes.
Yeah, I remember reading that. And at the time, I was doing client work as a freelance web designer, and I was still in the mindset of like, well, it's just client work, and that's all there is. And after a couple of years of doing client work, it was like, oh, products. You could do products, and you know, I think that book played a huge role in that for sure.
So you're in Brazil when you read that?
I was, and so I was teaching classes in the morning and evening, and then in the middle of the day I heard about this stuff called AdSense, and I was like, well, if you can build websites and put ads on them and get traffic to them, you can make money on AdSense. And so I started building. This was like in the height of the AdSense boom. This was like 2011 maybe, when there was like an amazing AdSense arbitrage and you could gain SEO and all this stuff. So I did that and it worked. And, you know, like I still remember like the first dollar I made. I think I bought like I made like $1.06 on a click on AdSense. I was like, oh, this internet money stuff is real. Like, you could do this.
Yeah.
And so kind of scaled that up a little bit while I was in Brazil and moved back. I got kicked out of Brazil for visa reasons, and started to scale that up, and it totally crashed. It was a total arbitrage business. There was like no real asset there. And so all of a sudden, I had this experience, and I went to work at a web agency. You know, I cold called a bunch of web agencies in Memphis and said, hey, I know how SEO works, I know how WordPress works, and spent about 6 months at a web agency.
And what year was this when you got into
this
the web agency?
2012.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
pretty recent. So I was a project manager there for about 6 months, not long, and that was when I hooked up with Dan and Ian from the Tropical MBA. And I think, as you guys know, they run a podcast and a membership community for entrepreneurs. And then they also have a physical product business where they manufacture in China and they sell B2B hospitality equipment, portable bars and valet parking equipment, which is the least internet marketing business ever. But
how did you connect with them? You're working at a web agency in Tennessee. Were they working with that agency, or did you just like reach out
it's
to them?
It's fine
or?
If you it's fine if you stole them as a client. Statute of limitations. Way past.
Can I check that contract? Yeah, I've been listening to their podcast. After I read the 4-Hour Work Week, I was like, you know, well, this is cool, but I think his recommendation at that point was like, sit down and write down 5 info products and then make one in 2 weeks and then send AdWords traffic to it and you'll be rich in 6 months. And I was like, I don't think that'll work because like that doesn't make sense. So I started poking around on the internet and ran across their stuff and ended up actually applying for the job. I took a pay cut when I went to work for them initially. And I think for a lot of the reasons we were just talking about, which is the opportunity felt a lot bigger to me. The web agency wasn't super ambitious and there wasn't a lot of opportunity to move up. I had lots of ideas on how to grow the web agency. Like, you know, like we had all these industry verticals we could specialize in and all these things. And the owner wasn't really interested. He was just kind of chugging along. And I wanted to go somewhere that ambition would be a little more applicable. And that was how I ended up managing their marketing for almost 2 years.
Did you apply to one of the jobs that they like posted on their site?
I did. I think I was number 8. They had like a series of internships that eventually became jobs. And I was number 7 or 8.
Very cool. And did you go out there to Asia and work with them, or was this from the US?
I did. So I lived in Asia for 2 years, was running the marketing from Asia for 2 years, and eventually came back and started doing sales and marketing for a product business. And then we also launched a software business for Valley Parking. I ran sales, customer development, product development from San Diego for that business. Nice. Doing sales from Asia is not fun.
Right. And I want to touch on that when we, you know, we're going to transition in a minute to talk about the book you're writing. I can't help but think that 2 years in Asia, right? Some time in South America and then 2 years in Asia, these things have an effect on your outlook in the world and what's possible, how much opportunity is out there. If you stay the same town, right? If you had never left Memphis, you just would not have the same mindset, you know, in terms of opportunity and what's possible and how big the world is. But traveling has to be part of that mix.
Yeah, I think dramatically. And I think what's cool about like these kind of podcasts is it's so much easier to connect with people now. I think a lot about like how to get down to fundamental principles. A lot of the book is about like how do you get down to like kind of the fundamental principles of what's going on right now and how to be strategic about that. And the one thing that always comes back for me is like the people you surround yourself with. And to be able to go somewhere and like surround yourself with people that are trying to do entrepreneurial stuff, that are running businesses, I think that's just such a huge leverage point.
Right. And you felt that itch at the agency that wasn't ambitious.
Yeah. And it's,
that's the level you'll stay at.
And location matters. You know, like Memphis, Tennessee is not a super entrepreneurial city, which is not to say you couldn't run and grow a business, but even like, you know, we had talked about doing at the agency a software product. But it was so like the ecosystem there was so underdeveloped. It was really hard to find angel funding or to find technical partners and all those that like those were just really tough to find.
Yeah, and I mean that's like you said. I mean that's what I love about podcasts is that it does form this kind of community. Even if you're on your own working solo, you know, in like a home office or whatever from wherever you are, it's a way to stay connected with what people are working on right now. Being entrepreneurial, doing their own thing, and getting kind of tapped into that. Of course, you know, networking in person and getting into these hubs of entrepreneurial, you know, minded people is kind of taking that to the next level. What are like the key lessons and key takeaways or big changes for you that happened during your time, you know, kind of working with Dan and Ian, but just being in that area out in Asia, like around these kind of, you know, getting into the environment that you wanted to get into?
I think Asia specifically was and still is really inspiring to me because like, I had this romanticized notion of different places have like different trajectories and there's like these like magical moments. So like New York in the 90s or Paris in the 20s. And there's like, you know, so Asia kind of feels like that spot right now in a lot of ways. I think Asia will probably be the place to be in the early 21st century, you know, like if we look back 100 years. So I think that was very inspiring to me. In terms of the community specifically there, I think one thing that's kind of under talked about in a sense because it's difficult to talk about is how much of entrepreneurship and becoming an entrepreneur is mindset. It's not like necessarily marketing tactics or, you know, business model structure. but just like changing your outlook on how you see the world and being able to surround myself, you know, I remember this like magical moment. It was like the second week I was there, and I was like used to hanging out with my friends in pool bars and talking about the NBA, which is great. But I remember we were sitting there, it was like three other entrepreneurs, and you know, they were talking about like, it was like Hitler, like if Hitler had had AI, like what were the implications of that? And I was like, oh, people talk about this stuff? Like, this is so cool. And just being able to be a part of those conversations, I think, was a huge mindset shift for me.
Yeah, I think we take it for granted. We look at around a lot of the people that we work with are other entrepreneurs, and it's just assumed that we all have mostly the same mindset. Everyone's different in their own way, but our minds have kind of cracked open. We took the blue pill. We're all kind of on the same team dealing with the same realities.
Yeah, we've kind of like accepted a certain path, even if we're doing it in different ways. It's right.
People know what's possible. They know what their limits are. They know what success is for them. They know what freedom they're going for. So all this combined, right? Your history, you get out to Asia. How, you know, let's get into the book. How do you end up deciding, I'm going to spend a whole bunch of my time focusing on this book? Like what brings you there?
I guess basically like a small digital marketing agency for maybe 6 months last year. And I still do some stuff with that, but that was kind of my focus. I was working on building out this agency. I was actually focusing on private medicine physicians. So there's a kind of a growing industry in the US of doctors that are getting out of the insurance system into private medicine. And I had some knowledge of that ecosystem because my parents were all in healthcare. My sister and my brother-in-law were both in healthcare, and went to a conference in Bangkok last October and kind of had this blog that I've been piddling around with, like, you know, semi-seriously for a couple of years. And a bunch of people walked up and they're like, that blog's like really good. Like, that's probably a bigger opportunity for you than this like marketing agency. I was like, oh, really? And you know, the first guy said that, I was like, well, you don't really understand what's going on. And a couple more people said it to me. I was like maybe I should, you know, like, get over myself and actually listen to people.
Is this your blog at taylorpearson.me?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. And sorry, it is good.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I was so excited about our conversation, because you talk about some like intellectual ideas. The diversification of, I mean, help me out, I forget the title, right? Like the commoditization of creativity.
Yeah, some of these recent articles I've been catching are awesome.
Right, the great articles, and it's idea-based, but then you also get down and dirty about like, this is how we did this tactic. I remember reading a post by you about what you did at a conference, at a
trade show.
Show. Right. Like that is tactical all the way down and dirty at the ground level. But then at the same time, you talk all the way up top about ideas. So that's why I was interested in this. And you know, so keep going. So you get to this this thing in Bangkok, and that starts to trigger, maybe you should take it more seriously, the writing and the personal side of things.
Yeah. And so I'm sitting at breakfast Wednesday morning after the conference, and we're kind of having this conversation about, the conference was 300 people. It was all entrepreneurs, and it was kind of people that had built businesses where they could show up to Bangkok, Thailand for a week and hang out with a bunch of entrepreneurs. And that's not very, you know, atypical. If you try to explain to someone like, you know, how do you build a business, or how is it possible even to do something where, you know, you can run your business from Thailand, or you can leave someone in charge of your business. Like, these are all very difficult concepts to explain to someone. And no one ever really articulates why. Like, I was reading a book from Darren Hardy. He's the Success Magazine guy. He's like very motivational, inspirational. And I was reading this like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I'd already invested like 5 months into the book. And I get to this point in the book and he's saying, you know, I'm the publisher of Success Magazine and I see what's going on. And I'm going to tell you what's going on right now. And I'm like, oh my God, he wrote my book. So he published it about the 4-year-old book. And then he goes, this is it. Go. And then he jumps into like chapter one. It's like sales. And I'm like, wait, you didn't say what's going on. Like, you totally skipped the whole part about what was going on. And that was the conversation we had in Bangkok, which is, no one's really articulated what's going on right now. Like, how is this possible? Is this like some weird fringe anomaly, or is it kind of the start of a trend? And so that's what the kind of the why behind the book was, is there is this movement that, you know, we all see as people that are inside of it, but it's very hard to articulate to other people. And I think sometimes like we doubt ourselves. I know I shouldn't doubt, like, is this, you know, is this internet thing for real? Like, is this really, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like, how does this fit into history, and how are these like technological changes and economic changes really impacting startups and entrepreneurship? And I think there's a misconception out there that it's just about, there are a few misconceptions. I mean, one is just that it's only about computers and like the fear of computers and technology when things are way more accessible than they've ever been. There's also the idea that it's just about digital nomadism as well, right? Like there's a lot of that, but there are plenty of guys like Jordan and I, or like married with kids living in the suburbs, or at least I'm in the suburbs over here, like, you know, still running businesses and plan to, you know, my whole life. So and there are plenty of guys doing that. And it's, you know, there is that sense of security, even though we're owning our own business and building our own thing.
Yeah. It is a strange thing. I am trying to extract millions of dollars from the screen that I look at. It is at least now it's more common, and now it's more accepted than it was 10 years ago, but it still makes you doubt. Is this, okay, what percentage of the economy is doing this? And is that going to realistically grow? You know, what's the cap on that? There is a cap. There's, you know, food needs to get made and things need to get built and roads need to be done. And so there is a very large element of the physical world that we kind of ignore. Yeah. So what's the thesis, the argument that you tried to articulate in the book? What is happening now?
So the one sentence summary would be basically that we've crossed a point with technology and globalization where the leverage points have changed, and that entrepreneurship is now the safer, more accessible, more profitable option compared to jobs and traditional life scripts, which have gotten more competitive and less profitable. That, you know, for macroeconomic reasons, a lot of this stuff gets drowned out in like the follow your passion talk. And what I felt was really missing in the market, and what I wanted to articulate to people that I couldn't articulate to friends or family, and in some ways couldn't articulate to myself, was that it's a smart decision financially. It's a smart decision in terms of the leverage and control it gives you over your own life.
Right, that entrepreneurship is not the risky path that you're hoping for big reward, that the argument can be made that going out on your own, even though it's definitely not a guaranteed way to make a lot of money, it can be argued that it's a safer path that gives you more control than going the corporate ladder route and not having control of your own fate.
And yeah, I think one of the things we're starting to see, and people are really starting to feel more and more, and I think the 2008 crash probably accelerated this, two main forces, I think globalization and the internet, are making it so that traditional safe careers, and I pick on accountants a lot in the book because I have a few friends that are accountants, so I kind of know the industry. There's this perception of those things as being safe.
Right.
And that perception is very much based on a historical view of the world, because very reasonably, like, that has been a very, you know, safe choice. If you became an accountant in the 1950s, like, you were going to make a good income, and that was going to be very stable. And I think a lot of people are making that same decision today. And you could say this, you know, the same is true of doctors, the same is true of lawyers, the same is true of many people I know in corporate positions, that they make the argument that it's safe. And I think that argument ignores the idea that the role that technology and specifically the internet is going to play, that if you're living in an ecosystem where things are changing faster and faster, and they are, and you can like look at all these statistics about, I think like in 1950, the average company was on the S&P 500 for 73 years, and now it's 22 years, and they're projecting it's going to be like 12 years. Like, industries are turning over faster and faster, companies are turning over faster and faster. And the people that thrive in that environment are people that are very adaptable, people that are very resilient, and people that have entrepreneurial skill sets.
Yeah, and there are so many, you know, you talk about like startups and entrepreneurship. People see that as such a high risk path, but it's actually more accessible and less risky than it's ever been. But then on that flip side, the path of becoming an employee and working up the corporate ladder, there's much more risk today than there has been, and there's so many forces that are out of your control. As an employee, I mean, you know, a manager's decision to lay off a whole floor of a company, or internal politics, that can kind of kick you out of your position, or, you know, and that sort of thing. It's like, there are all these things that, I mean, these days you see employee turnover is, you know, happening so much faster than it's been. Like the idea of staying in one position for 10, 15, 20 years is no, you know,
yeah, not happening. But it still feels safer. Someone else is writing you a check, direct deposit into your account. Someone else is handling your health insurance. There's a building that you park at and you walk into, and everything, the lights are on and people are at work. And it just, currently, the way we grew up, those remnants are still very strong. We still look at that as that's safer.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that feeling of it being safe is just very short-term thinking, right? Because you're looking at that, it's like, okay, I know where my salary is coming from this month. I know how the bills are getting paid this month and next month. And for the year, okay, things are looking okay, I think. And you look at entrepreneurship and it's, I don't know how it's going to happen this month, but it's the long term or medium term really that's a little more risky when you look at that. So it's
yeah, tricky. I think one of the ideas I talk about in the book, a big influence on my thinking has been Nassim Taleb. He's the author of Anti-Fragile and the Black Swan and Fooled by Randomness. But one of the ideas he talks about, he calls the turkey problem. So if you look at a turkey, the story of its life is that every day things get better and better. So you're in the turkey pen and the butcher comes out and he feeds you. You say, oh, this is good. The butcher feeds me. I just kind of hang out in the turkey pen. And the next day he comes out and feeds you. And that goes on every single day, right? Until the day before Thanksgiving. And everything goes off a cliff, right? So you're based on this like historical record of every day until the day before Thanksgiving, everything in that turkey's worldview indicates that things are only getting better and that everything is safe and that nothing's going to happen until he falls off a cliff. You know, the butcher walks out with the hatchet instead of the food. And I think because there are so many roles which have been traditionally safe for 50 years or 100 years, there's a lot of people that are in that same turkey problem scenario where I've been getting this paycheck for 10 years. And so everything about my worldview and everything about my experience indicates very rationally and very logically that it's going to keep coming 2 weeks from now. And technology changes that, right? Like industries don't change slowly now. They change very, very quickly. And, you know, someone could be in a position that gets turned into a SaaS app.
Yeah.
And they've got, you know, two more mortgage and three kids and all these bills. And all of a sudden their skill set just became obsolete.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. That's a strong analogy. You know, it makes people realize like, you know, it's not just lose your job. Losing your job is not that far off from losing your head, depending on what stage of life you're at. It is a serious thing and something worth thinking about and avoiding. So what would you say to the argument that entrepreneurship isn't for everyone? That there's only, you know, a small strata of human that is going to be interested in entrepreneurship or built for it or raised with it or whatever you want to say. Is that bias? Is that just looking at the world as it currently is? You know, what do you say to that outlook when you are some people meant to be employees? That's like a horrible thing to say.
It's funny that we're at the point where that is a horrible thing to say.
it sounds bad. I'm uncomfortable. Right. I'm uncomfortable saying that as a fact. That's like, yeah. That doesn't sound right.
My personal belief is I think human beings are inherently creative and striving and want to do things, and that a lot of the educational system and system that was built up as a result of the Industrial Revolution, it was very profitable to train people to become cogs, because in an industrial society you have to have cogs, and maybe cogs is like too emotionally charged of a word, but like you need people that are told what to do. Like middle management in an industrial society is like a very important role. But we're moving out of that, you know, that society. Like you look at all these companies that are just getting rid of middle management, like, you know, Uber and the taxi industry is the obvious example. Like,
yeah,
you don't need people. Yeah, Airbnb.
Unbelievable. Yeah, you used to look, you look at a city, right? You think about Portland, where I live. You used to look at that as a developer or someone in the hotel industry and say, X number of people, X number of people visiting. This is how many rooms the city needs. And then Airbnb comes along and obliterates that math, just changes the whole thing forever. And that happens all the time now.
You know, but like going back to the question of mindset, I think this kind of plays into Jordan's question a little bit. I mean, we know that there's a certain mindset that's required to start and run a business. And it's like this planning. I mean, just for example, like I'm constantly thinking about my business. I go home at night, I'm thinking about it. I wake up in the morning, I'm thinking about it. I'm working on stuff. If I remember a few years back when I was working at the job at the web agency, I think the thing that I loved most about that job was just the fact that when I leave around 5, 6 p.m., I'm free. You know, I can do my own thing, and there's something to be said for that comfort, you know. And it's not to say that my job was meaningless there. I was doing pretty good work, pretty interesting, meaningful work. But I had the comfort and security of knowing that I'm getting paid, I'm doing something interesting, and I can go home at nights on the weekends and do my own thing. Is there something to be said for that, or how do we reconcile that with this idea?
I think there's definitely something to be said for that, and I think like. It's like popular. I kind of define jobs in the book as someone that follows order. I think like Seth Godin's definition from Lynchpin is like really applicable if you've read that book. You know, like if you can make stuff happen, it doesn't matter. If you're on someone's payroll, like it doesn't matter. Like really impeccably talented people that want to be on a steady paycheck are going to be fine. Like that's not going to be an issue. The other two things I would say to that are, one, in a sense, I don't think it matters. Like when Uber took over the taxi industry, like the fact that some people liked being taxi, you know, the switchboard taxi operators, like it doesn't matter. Like the job's gone. Like the industry's been overthrown. Like it doesn't really matter what you want. Like you know, when an industry gets eaten, it gets eaten. And like you know, if you wanted to be a farmer and you know, farming got overtaken by industrial agriculture, like. You know, tough luck. Like it's over.
Yeah.
But I do think we're going to see a lot of. Right now, it's kind of like a yes or no thing. There's not a lot of like middle steps from employee to entrepreneurship. I kind of went through one of those middle steps. I kind of had this apprenticeship phase where I worked in a small entrepreneurial company and I got a lot of autonomy and freedom. And if I wanted to go start a new product line or I wanted to go start a new marketing campaign, I could do some of those middle area activities. And I think there's going to be a lot more of that. In the future, like spin-off companies, and you see like Agora Publishing is one of these companies where they have employees that say they're an information publishing company. You know, I want to go start a new newsletter division on Mongolian bonds or whatever. And you take a 50% revenue share in that and you have Agora manage the back end. So I think there should be a lot of those kind of arrangements or like equity grants. I think there's going to be some like middle paths in there.
Yeah, I like that idea. The thing about what Brian was saying, that opiate, that like 5 o'clock comes, I go hang out and I have a beer with my buddies and I don't need to think about work. That's, correct me if I'm wrong, but that sounds like a recent phenomenon. You think 100, 200 years ago, which is, you know, nothing in history, people didn't have that direct deposit, walk out at five. Like you need to farm the land or it's not going to grow and you're going to starve. You know, so maybe the norm is fending for yourself and being creative and striving. And it's the Industrial Revolution, the past 150 years, that allowed for that. Hey, we're the guys in control. We own the factory. What do we need to do to put in place a system where we have hundreds and thousands of people working for us and we can keep them nice and satisfied while they do that? Right? That sounds like a recent phenomenon. And what it makes me think of in modern times, and I love how we're just dancing around politics here, right? and not Democrat Republican politics. I'm talking about like the state and like where it falls, right? One of the huge hurdles, both real and in mindset, to entrepreneurship is what you have to deal with the state to get in business. You health insurance. Right, the people and the companies who need the most help get the least when it comes to health insurance, which is a big deal because look, you got a family, like you need health insurance.
Yeah, and these issues are like U.S. only, you know. Worse in the U.S. Right.
Everywhere has their own issues.
Yeah.
But the paperwork, the difficulty to transition into your own business and what that entails, it just shouldn't be what it is right now. And if that was smoothed out. I can see a lot of these middle ground type endeavors happening more and people making the transition because it's not pulling, you know, the platform out from under you and have an offend for yourself immediately. It can look a lot different. The stuff I deal with, I'm in the state of Oregon. The company is a C Corp in Delaware. I have my S Corp in Connecticut. Like sales and use filings in the state, it's unreasonable. It doesn't make any sense.
That's craziness.
So these are all factors that are put in place that can be changed. And the mindset 300 years ago can be reintroduced as the dependence on, you know, a large number of employees to benefit people who are the owners. Let's get a little Karl Marx on it. You know, that system doesn't need to be there.
Yeah. Well, I think Karl Marx is a great example because...
Yeah, we got there. Nice.
Well, you know, Marx was right in the sense that people want to own the tools of production and they'll find a way. It was instead of doing it through communism, like they just got the internet and laptops, right? It's like everyone owns the tools of production. It's just like, yeah, I got an Apple and I got a $40 internet connection. Like, welcome to the tools of production.
Right.
First time I've ever felt like a Marxist and been proud of it.
You know, so, I mean, Tyler, what would you say is the transition? How do we transition from, or are we now seeing this transition, you know, out of this old model and into a more realistic model of today, of where people are becoming more entrepreneurial? I mean, in my view, I think a big piece is the education, whether it's formal education, like in university or earlier than that, in elementary up through high school, and then into like apprenticeships and learning to have that entrepreneurial mindset and the tools necessary to build something from scratch. I mean, how are we going to transition huge populations of people to change that type of thinking?
Yeah, I guess my answer to that is I don't feel qualified to answer that question. Right. I think on an individual level, there's kind of two scripts that I talk about in the book that are, at least in our community, emerging as pretty clear. I think one of those is apprenticeships. You know, if you're in a position that's a corporate job or you're somewhere where you can't be entrepreneurial, going to work for a small entrepreneurial business where you can acquire a network of people that are entrepreneurs, you can acquire a skill set on entrepreneurship, you can understand how to run a small business. You know, that's one script. And then I think the other script is one that actually Rob Walling, I know you guys are big fans of him as well, has talked about, which is stair-stepping. And that one of the things the internet has made possible is these like micro businesses that are very cheap to start, very low risk, and have potentially very high upside. And so it's, you know, I don't know if you can teach entrepreneurship in the sense that like we think about education today, but you can certainly get an entrepreneurial education for pennies on the dollar in terms of like, what does it cost to set up a WordPress site? Or like, what does it cost to start a productized service? I mean, nothing. You know, it's like you make the sale, and as soon as you make the sale, you go on Odesk and you hire the contractors and you write the SOP, and like there's no upfront cost to make that happen.
Yep.
Yeah, but it takes mindset. It comes back to it.
Yeah.
I have these conversations regularly. I talk to someone who babysits my kids. She is a phenomenal like social worker. She deals with kids that have like behavioral issues, ADHD, all these different things. And she's like, Jordan, what the hell do you do? I don't understand. I want to know more about entrepreneurship. I'm like, you have everything you need right now. What you do is so valuable to so many parents. Just teach what you know. Just teach them how to handle a kid with these behavioral issues. And then people will follow you, and then you will offer them something of higher value for money. And it's like, what? What? I don't understand how that works.
I talk to my brother about like the same thing all the time. He manages an organic farm here in Connecticut. He's like a farmer by trade, and he knows that stuff inside and out. Like every time we hang out, he's talking my ear off over organic farming best practices. And I'm learning 10 new things every time we talk about it. And I'm just telling and at the same time, he's like, I'm kind of managing this farm. I don't own the place. It's getting a little boring. It's kind of routine. I've got all this free time. I'm like, dude, you've got to be blogging. You've got to be teaching this stuff.
Yeah.
And share this knowledge. And it's not just about that. It's about building something. You want to, build something from the ground up and own something. And I know he has that ambition. He just doesn't know where to go with it. And I'm just like, you have all this expertise and knowledge and experience. Share that. Teach it.
Yeah. So exciting. There really might come a point where that's mainstream. And your brother knows about that and sees that as a path. And the same thing with my babysitter. You know, it's like that can happen. People used to not understand why you would keep a blog. And now everyone understands. And right. It like evolves.
And so it's that education piece. It's people need to become educated about starting a business and doing your own thing. But I think a big part of this is people need to embrace themselves as an educator, no matter what you're doing, no matter what your trade is, your product or service. You've got to be teaching. You've got to be sharing your knowledge and passing it on to someone. And there is value to that.
And I think part of what's so cool to me is what's available to them. I think Patrick McKenzie was tweeting about this, like how much easier it is to start today than it was 10 years ago. But he's right. Like, you know, I was looking over some of your stuff about productized services. Like, that's amazing. Like, you can get that information for free now. Like, how do you package a service? What is a product? Like, what does this business model look like? And here's five examples. And like, oh my God, like this is all amazing.
Yeah. All the value was in knowing how to do it before. And everyone hoarded it and kept it to themselves. And now it's the people who give it away that get more value. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, even among people in our community of people running their own businesses, it's still, I think, the minority of people who are actually taking the time to blog on the side of running their businesses. And so, you know, Taylor, your blog, you've been writing, you know, really insightful articles. I mean, how did that come about? Like, you're working with Dan and Ian, you're doing all this different work. Like, how did you commit to the idea of taking all that extra time to write and get these ideas out?
Yeah, great. I actually was just having a conversation with someone about this. I think because I worked for someone that was basically teaching, that had a podcast and they had a podcast and used to blog frequently, now blog infrequently, but still have a podcast that comes out every week. It became like kind of from the inside of the machine. I think this is kind of part of the magic of apprenticeships, is like you get inside the machine and you see how it works. It became the value they got out of that was just, you know, tremendous. And it's like hard to explain to someone, like, you know, why should you do this? And I think, you know, I was listening to one of your episodes a couple of weeks ago. You said something like, you know, how amazing podcasting is. But by the way, like, you're going to have to do it for 6 months before anything interesting happens.
Right.
Like, at least 6 months before anything interesting happens, like probably 12 to 24 months. And I think we've kind of like come full circle on this like direct marketing thing, that what was amazing about the internet on the front end was you could like put in a dollar and get back $2, right? Like, you see the AdWords and you like put in a dollar and then it like comes back. It's like, oh, I got $2.50 back. Like, put more money into that machine. And that's getting more and more competitive. And there's a lot of opportunity in less tangible things. Like, it is hard to track podcasting and blogging and all those things. And in a sense, that's why it's good. Like, if there was like really direct ROI, it'd be like way more competitive.
Yeah. This is something that I feel like comes up again and again for all of us who have friends and family who are not entrepreneurial, but they start asking a couple of questions here and there about possibly starting something or some kind of idea. And you just want to like flood them with information, like, oh, you got to read this, you got to listen to these podcasts, like read this book, like, oh, check this out. And you got to use that tool. Like we know all this stuff, but you know, I think there's this part of that, coming back to that mindset thing, there's part of like just a like a hungry curiosity. When I want to start something or build something, it's like, all right, well, how do I figure this out? Start Google searching, start looking for references and figure out every piece of the puzzle. And a friend comes to me or a family member comes to me and asks, you know, how do I start a freelance website business or something? It's like, where do I begin? I mean, but like, how are you not curious enough to start, you know, getting that hunger and filling that need? I don't know.
I think it's because they want the end result, but not all the stuff that goes in between. And nothing wrong with that. You can't blame them. But
no, yeah.
I was also frustrated by that question. I tried to solve it by writing a book. I think I have a friend, actually. He was in a corporate job for about 2 years, quit, and he was like doing some Facebook advertising, and like his dad is a dentist. He was like building his dad a dental website, and just got like an apprenticeship with another friend of mine. I think the people I've seen that have made the transition, like, it is very hard to lead them in a sense. Like, they just kind of you kind of see, like, I think with my friends that have jumped, it's like, they're just kind of like looking around. They're like, there's something here. And I think it was the same way with me. It was like, and that was probably why I ended up in an apprenticeship. I didn't have a lot of, I didn't know anyone entrepreneurial when I was growing up. I didn't know anyone entrepreneurial when I was in college. And I was like, yeah, I don't really get this, but I feel like there's something there. And like, maybe I'll go work for some guys that get it and see what it's all about. And then I got there and I was like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, yeah, there's something here.
Yeah, it's like I want to share so much and point to these things that I've discovered over time, but it's not really going to do anyone any good unless they have the question. Like, I can't give them the answer unless they have the question first, you know, for each thing in that path.
So what that brings me to is the book. Like, what's next? What's your ideal outcome from the book? Are you trying to like just articulate what's happening? Are you trying to encourage people to take a certain path? Like, what's your ideal for the book?
So I read a book, it's not very well known, about 2 years ago, that was a big influence on me. It's called The Fourth Economy. And it's by a guy named Ron Davis. And I talk about his book in my book some. And he kind of paints this picture of, we move through three economic stages and we're transitioning to the third. So we've gone from agricultural to industrial to knowledge. And now we're in this transition from knowledge to entrepreneurial. And that what's holding us back as individuals, what's holding us back as a society, is that we're not making this transition very well. And that certainly is, you know, he said that, and I was like, and he said a lot of like theoretical things that I saw happening on the ground. He was like, you know, like, you could have employees with revenue shares, and like, you could have people take over entrepreneurial divisions of companies. Like, yeah, it's like, that's Cody. Like, I know Cody. He's doing, like, he's running that thing. And so that was very inspiring to me. And that was kind of what I wanted to push forward. But I think the argument that's not being made is that entrepreneurship is an intelligent choice, and there hasn't been a really rational case. So that's part of the book, is making a rational case, and then also giving people some like really clear paths and next steps. I think, you know, you guys touched on this, and I certainly felt the same way, is you go looking for scripts, right? And like, the script to be a doctor, the script to be a lawyer is like fairly clear. You know, you get this GPA and you apply to these schools, and then you ask the alumni network, and you know, it's not so clear on how to become an entrepreneur. And there's lots of great stories about how that's been done, and they're just not widely disseminated. And so, like, to get those stories out there and talk about, how do you become an apprentice? Like, how do people hire apprentices? If you're running a small business and you want to bring someone as an apprentice, like, what's the process for that? Or how do you stair step? Like, what is looking at ways to start new products, and why is that possible?
Very cool.
So the ideal outcome for me is, I think a lot of people would start to see the world that we're talking about, the way we see the world.
Absolutely. Well, so the book is called The End of Jobs. And where are you at in this process of writing and releasing the book? And like, where can we go to kind of learn more about it?
So when will this show come out?
Next week.
Okay. So I'm still in the process of writing the book. The book is going to be released June 30th. You can go to my website. It's taylorpearson.me. And there's a landing page up for the book. It's in the top nav. I think it's... it's a longer URL, but
yeah, we'll get the link in the show notes for this episode.
So I am going to be doing I'm going to give the book away for free for the first 5 days on Amazon, because I do kind of want to get it out there, and that's more important to me. And then I am going to be running a giveaway for the first 2 weeks leading up to the book launch. I have 67 favorite books I've read over the past 3 years on entrepreneurship. I'm going to be giving those away. So if you want to hop in and win a bunch of books and get a free copy, you can sign up on that landing page, and I'll let you know.
Very cool.
Very cool. Well, we're looking forward to it. I'm definitely interested in reading the book. I think the conversation was great. I think we can go on for hours.
I'm sure we could.
If we had the time. This stuff is it's interesting to talk about, and it's real. It's happening all around us at all times. But Taylor, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, Taylor, this was awesome. Thanks for coming on. And again, you know, taylorpearson.me is where you can find all that stuff. We'll link it up in the show notes. And yeah, Taylor, we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Take care.